Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All resources available, all aspects of the federal family are focused on this.
The Department of Homeland Security will continue working to coordinate the federal response through FEMA, making sure that the entire federal family is working as one.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is the new bottom for Obama. They're now changing the word government to family. Carney and Napolitano calling the government a federal family, not a federal government. Federal family. You know, we know about news speak from books about propaganda, but under Obama, it's taken on a new meaning. Why do you think they dropped the word government? Because they know you hate government, you distrust government, you're suspicious of government. You understand that government is a band of thieves, by and large. Not entirely, but a band of thieves, nevertheless. Their pensions exceed that of the private sector. Their salaries exceed that of the private sector. They will not stop spending. They jam bills down your throat. So they've changed their name from a federal government to a federal family. Now, the last family I heard about was the family name Soprano. Prior to that, there was a family name Corleone. But now we have a new family called Federal, Federales. That's why I don't want to talk about it, because they're dangerous and I fear them. I want to talk about Jerry Lewis. I want to talk about comedians, and I want to talk about the muscular dystrophy telethon that's coming up this weekend. Here's a man, Jerry Lewis, who raised a couple of billion dollars for the MDA telethon over the last 45 years. And yet, the people who took over the telethon, and this is related to government, by the way, the very same bureaucrats who took over the telethon threw out the man who created it. And now we're going to have a broadcast this year, which will no longer actually be airing on Labor Day. Instead, they're going to have a series of lightweights that nobody will watch, raising very little money. They will have celebrities that are not really celebrities, that nobody cares about, on the show, and nobody will contribute much money. There will be very few contributions. But the question is, why did they dump Jerry Lewis? Why did they won't say why. What's the psychodrama? Now, I'm going to raise the issue of comedy for a reason, because the issue of comedy in America today is symptomatic of the death of America itself. There was a time in America when comedy was clean, and yet it was funny. We've now reached a point where you have degenerate vermin who espouse filth day and night, the F word every minute, the B word every second, everything dirty, 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 and they're not funny. And yet the psycho druggies in the audience sit and listen to them and laugh at them. Then you have the sad sacks like Larry David, who, although he's not as filthy as the others, is nevertheless in some ways more pornographic because he portrays the Jewish male in the most negative stereotypical light possible. As I said to you, Larry David is the step and fetch it of our time, and the audiences love it because they want to believe all Jews are neurotic, cheap, cheat you, and are otherwise untrustworthy. That's why Larry David is popular in Hollywood, because he typifies everything wrong with liberalism. So let's go back to a time together when comedy was king and when comedians were clean. Years ago, I interviewed a comedian named Steve Allen. And in this interview, Steve Allen, some of you may remember his name, and I talked about comedy and what happened to comedy and why it became dirty. I want to ask you a question, though, before I play some sound of Lenny Bruce and others on the Savage Nation today to take a break from the terrible news of the day. And believe me, it's pretty terrible. Israel's moving warships to the border with Egypt. Thank you, Hillary Clinton. Iran is moving warships to the border with Egypt. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. You'll finally get the Armageddon you've hoped for, and Israel will disappear so you and Brzezinski can click your German wine glasses together, in my opinion. It's terrible what's going on in the world, and I think I need a break from it, truthfully, especially after the dental work of yesterday, which I'm not going to talk about, even though I just injected it into the conversation. But I want to talk about comedy, and I want to ask you, is there a comedian today who you call funny, who is not a filth dirtbag, a degenerate drug addicted, sick, degenerate dirtbag? Who is funny today? I don't know of any comedians that I actually watch who I think are funny. There's a few people who are very dirty, and sometimes they're funny, but they're primarily filthy rather than primarily funny. And why is it that they can't be funny without being filthy is the question. The answer is quite simple. They don't have the brains to do real satire or sarcasm. That requires thought. It requires thinking. That's not comedy. That is pornography. And so I'd like to ask you, do you have any comedians other than, Joe Biden? Are there any other comedians besides Joe Biden out there who you find to be funny but not pornographic? Because there's no question that Joe Biden would pass today as a stand-up comic because he does get away with some good one-liners without using actually using dirty words. Then I want to talk about Jerry Lewis. Why do you think they dumped Jerry Lewis? He's 85 years old. He's still sick, but he's banished from the annual Labor Day muscular dystrophy event that he built from scratch and molded in his own image. Why do you think they threw him out? What's behind it? 1-800-449-8255. I want to talk about comedians for a moment on the Savage Nation. The lights are lit, as usual, because I have a fifth sense for radio, if not a sixth sense, and I know that you yourself are sick and tired, as I am, of the news. I turn on Fox News, and they're talking about the election as though it's occurring 2 weeks from now. I'm asking you, do you really care about the election now? So much is going to change. You're counting Obama out because you're a fool. The Democrats are just holding their powder. The fact of the matter is that they're going to reelect Obama because the Republicans will shoot themselves in the foot because they don't want to win. Because they want to give the Democrats 8 years to fleece you, you fools. So then they can come back and say, you see that? We told you so. We'll save your skin. So rather than talking about the tragedy of Washington, I'd like to talk about the comedy of today. Now, if you call about a comedian I never heard of, like I am on line nine, I can't take the call. Never heard of him. Never heard of the comedian. And so therefore, don't call. Don't put him up on the board on line nine. Drop it. Here's another one called with a name I never heard of. Knock him off the air. So let's go to the older people in the audience who can name names I heard of. Okay? You call me dated if you want. I never heard of these people. I don't know. You're putting names up. What do they perform in the Las Vegas? What? I never heard of them. Where are you getting these names from? You see, what I'd really rather talk about, I can't talk about. Remember a few weeks ago, the Commander-in-Chief, Barack Hussein Obama, oversaw the deaths of 30 U.S. service members and 7 commandos, including the largest loss of elite Navy SEALs in U.S. history. 17 members of the elite Navy SEALs were killed because they were put onto an out-of-date CH-47 slow-turning Chinook helicopter. And I've been asking now, since it occurred on August 6th, which person in the U.S. Army put all these SEALs on one helicopter? And why has he not been found out yet? The answer is nobody is investigating this. They're doing a whitewash and a cover-up. The U.S. command in Kabul will not release full mission details. The Army pilot will not tell us anything about it. People associated with special ops and Army aviation are not making any statements whatsoever. But the fact of the matter is, as I said to you as a non-military expert, Bert, the lumbering CH-47 Chinook was never designed to fly into the teeth of a firefight to deliver troops and supplies. And yet, Barack Hussein Obama, Commander-in-Chief, put the Navy SEALs on this big 50,000-pound monster target, which was shot down by a handheld crude weapon called an RPG. I want to know why someone's head has not rolled. I want to know who in the Pentagon put those men on that helicopter. I want to know why the American people are not demanding the name of that individual. I want to know why the Army is allowed to stonewall the way they've been stonewalling so many other things under the Commander-in-Chief, the communist Barack Hussein Obama. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What was going on in Hollywood? Sinatra was going with a young girl, and Cary Grant married a young girl, Henry Fonda married a young girl. I can't wait till I get old. I got an uncle that's enthused him, too. He's 73 years old. Still chases women, forgets what for. He's going with a 20-year-old girl. He went to the doctor. He said, Doc, I'm going to marry a 20-year-old girl. The doctor said, this can be fatal. He said, well, if she dies, she dies. You know, we're clowning about this, but you're looking at a guy tonight married for 38 years to the same woman. Tell me, where have I failed?
God. All right, we're talking about comedy and tragedy on the Savage Nation today. I played a little soundbite from Henny Youngman doing the jokes about whatever he's doing. I mean, I was asking the question, who dropped Jerry Lewis and why? They're mum about why they threw Jerry Lewis off this enterprise he created for the children with muscular dystrophy. Mixed in with this are some serious political problems that you absolutely have to pay attention to. I'm going to play for you a soundbite that will live in infamy. I have told you I had heard through inside sources that the reason I was banned from the United Kingdom is because members of the royal family had converted to Islam secretly. I didn't believe it, and I don't believe it. But today we have proof positive that that at least some members related to the loyal to the leadership of England are now in fact Muslims. We're going to play a soundbite for you of Tony Blair's sister-in-law who has converted to Islam, speaking before radical Islamics, attacking Jews in Israel in clip 21. You're never going to believe what you're about to hear. I did not make this up. But when you listen to this, you'll understand why the former Prime Minister of England banned Michael Savage from entering the United Kingdom. It's because it is Londonistan. It is run by Muslims. Listen to clip 21.
Today, I tell you, when Israel kills a Gaza child, they kill my child. When Israel kills a mother from Gaza, they kill my mother. And when they kill the elderly, and when they kill children, and when they bomb homes, they bomb our homes. Our message today to Israel is clear. We are all Palestinian now. We want you to know, we, the British people here today, don't want your ambassador here. Go!
Now you have Hitler's Nazism showing its ugly face in a headscarf in the form of Tony Blair's sister-in-law, who, if it was 1939, would be wearing a swastika, in my opinion, and speaking the way the Germans spoke about the West and about Jews in particular. And so now when you ask yourself, why did they pick on Michael Savage and ban him from the United Kingdom? It's a story you think you know. You don't know. You don't know the inside story. I just played for you some tragic statements from a woman who is the sister-in-law of Tony Blair, the former very nice, very liberal, very liberal Prime Minister Tony Blair. Remember how nice he was? Remember how Mr. Rogers Tony Blair was? I have found out that most of the upper class of England, the ruling class, are infected with liberalism to the extent that you cannot even discern the difference between them and the Islamists that are threatening to steal England and turn it into an Islamic state. It's almost impossible to discern the difference. And so when they came for Michael Savage, some of you said, wait a minute, this is crazy, this is unfair. Even some of you liberals went to my website and went to the Savage Legal Fund and contributed. But I got to tell you something, and I'm going to tell it to you right now. When my novel comes out on September 13th, Abuse of Power, from St. Martin's Press, I can guarantee you, although it is fiction, you're going to find out that sometimes it is life that imitates art, not art that imitates life. Believe me, fiction is sometimes closer to reality than you might imagine. So now, having given you some sobering tragedy today, Tony Blair's sister-in-law on Israel, we will now go to some comedy. And I'm going to mix it back and forth today. Here is Lenny Bruce on the death penalty.
Somebody's going to get fried tonight. Tonight, someone get fried tonight. More people using natural gas than ever before. Tonight. Shut him up! Shut that nut up! Fry somebody tonight. They're gonna fry somebody. Shut him up! Shut that nut up! You can call me a nut when it's published. It goes, fry somebody tonight. Back to the bridge. It's a wild tune.
All right. It's something within the context of something that was funny at the time. It doesn't sound very funny today. Now, Lenny Bruce did have a bit of a potty mouth. He liked to say certain dirty things. He actually started the road to the degeneration of the so-called comedy generation of today. There are very few who are really not dirty, who make a living. Some are. There are some kings of comedy who are left who don't have to resort to filth in order to get you to laugh. And I'm asking you, why did they throw Jerry Lewis off the telethon? I want to make it a timely piece. And if you want to talk politics, how do you feel about Tony Blair's sister-in-law taking the side of the Islamists, those who would destroy Israel and wipe it off the map, such as Ahmadinejad? Do you believe me when I tell you that I've heard that several members of the royal family have converted to Islam? And what does that mean for America? It means an awful lot for America, incidentally. I don't think the English people themselves understand what has happened to their own country. And then we could go even to a bigger question, from comedy, tragedy, to religion itself. Because I was thinking about it on a long bicycle ride today, on the Savage bicycle ride. I took a long one. I wanted to burn off some adrenaline. And I was thinking about religion. And I passed a church on my bicycle that said, a Brazilian church that has celebrations on Sunday. And I said, that's interesting. There's a Brazilian community here, and they are all Catholics, and they go to the church. So I said, how did the Brazilians become Catholics? And I said, through missionaries, through proselytizing, through basic conversion from paganism to Christianity generations ago. And I said, there's a cycle to all religions. And Christianity is on the wane throughout most of the third world, while Islam is on the rise. And then I thought about it, and I said, why is Islam so appealing to the masses? Savage. So we're talking about comedy and tragedy, and I played some comedic pieces. I've told you some tragic stories, which I'm not going to reiterate. I want to play some political comedy for you, and I think there is no better example of the political comedy than Maxine Waters in some of the things she said over the weekend at the Congressional Black Caucus Town Hall in Atlanta at Atlanta Technical College. And perhaps one of the funniest things she said was in Clip 8. Listen to Maxine Waters.
We've got to understand our power. We've got to understand that there is power in organizing. There's power in numbers. For anybody who would suggest that the civil rights days are gone, you don't need to march, you don't need to protest, let me have you rethink that. If you show up at any bank in America at noontime and throw a ring around that bank with human bodies, and they for 1 minute think there's going to be a run on the bank, they'll change their ways.
So that's Maxine Waters, a so-called sitting member of so-called Congress, using rent-a-mob tactics behind the scenes. It gets even better when she calls for a tax on the Tea Party in Clip 10. Listen to this now.
You can't blink. You can't be intimidated. You can't be threatened. You've got to look the Tea Party in the eye and take them on. The people want us to fight. They want us to stand up. They want us to be strong. And they want us not only to create these jobs in all of the many ways. They want.
Well, let's stop this hate monger for a minute. She's actually calling for civil war. She's calling for insurrection. She's calling for basically a war between the Tea Party and her mass of people. I don't know who her people are. I can pretty much figure it out. But she has been told by Obama and by David Axelrod to cause a civil disturbance in America, as sure as I'm sitting here. They all have their marching orders. Their marching orders is to simply go out and attack Tea Party members wherever they can. This is what's going on behind the scenes. Obama's planning insurrection in this country, and he's using his lieutenants like Maxine Waters and the other superb people that he has in place in Congress to basically lay the groundwork for civil unrest in this country in order to make sure that him and his illegitimate party get reelected. So that also is very comedic if you want to look at it from that point of view. We then have other comedic stories to play for you, such as President Obama's drunk uncle. Listen to clip 11.
This man is the son of the president's grandfather's third wife. Now, President Obama knew that he had a long-lost uncle living somewhere in Massachusetts, but he may not have known just where until his long-lost uncle showed up here at the Framingham Police Department.
And clip 12, please.
Police released the mugshot of Oyongo Obama. The 67-year-old was arrested for allegedly driving drunk after nearly hitting an unmarked police cruiser outside the Chicken Bone Saloon last Tuesday.
I saw the cop get out of the cruiser. It was an unmarked police car, actually. And the cop got out of it and started yelling at... I didn't know who was in the car, but I saw him get out and start yelling at somebody.
Oh, the cop was the wrong party. He yelled at a drunk who almost hit him. Maybe they should fire the cop. Because after all, the 67-year-old grand-lost uncle of... the president's grandfather's third wife's sister from Kenya, even though he was an illegal alien and drunk, he has certain civil rights. And after all, you might have Maxine Waters calling for massive civil unrest. But apparently the crackers in Massachusetts took the drunk into custody in clip 13. Let's hear that one.
After his arrest, the 67-year-old Kenyan was taken into custody by immigration on a federal warrant claiming he has been living illegally in Framingham. People at his home weren't talking.
Do you know Mr. Obama?
No, I don't. You need to hear.
And then it goes on.
He's also the older brother of Zetuni Onyango of Boston, who successfully fought deportation last year. She spoke with WBZ's Jonathan Elias last September.
You have the obligation to make me a citizen.
See, she knows her rights, even though she has no rights as an illegal alien. She knows how to jawbone people. This woman should run for office. She's a new Maxine Waters. Here she is, an illegal alien who fought deportation last year, and she says, you have the obligation to make me a citizen. I am so proud to tell you that we have a star that was just born in the form of Onyango, Zetuni Onyango, who has learned how to work the American system. It's really amazing to see what a star really is made of. And now back to the primary question of comedy in an age of pornography. New York WOR, Richard, who do you think is a good comedian who's not dirty?
The only one that I know that's current is Jeff Foxworthy. No other one who's clean comes to mind at all. Not in today's.
And he does the redneck stuff, right?
That's correct, he does. But he does do it. He often plays with others that are pretty lowlife, but he himself is a pretty clean fellow.
Have you seen him on a live show, Foxworthy, or have you seen him on TV?
Both.
All right, and you enjoyed his show. Let's play a clip of Jeff Foxworthy on the Savage Nation.
If you own a home that is mobile and 14 cars that aren't, you might be a redneck. If the most common phrase heard in your house is, somebody go jiggle the handle, you might be a redneck.
Very funny. Yeah, he is funny. There's no question about it. So why did they take an innately really comedic man who did a lot of stuff with his body and his voice, Jerry Lewis? You know, Jerry Lewis, if you watched his early movies, was funny in that he played a complete schlemiel, schlemazel, schmigegi, putz, schmendrick. In other words, a loser. He would do things with his body. He contorted his face. He contorted his legs. And as a young kid, I loved him because... Why do you think kids like a comedian like that? Because there's a big adult who looks helpless. And a child, of course, always feels helpless in an adult world. So he likes a comedian to portray basically a helpless individual. So he can relate to him. And the audiences love Jerry Lewis because they all like to laugh at him because he was funny in the sense that he was helpless and projected himself as a klutzy, helpless guy, dropping the microphone, falling down, twisting his legs, contorting his face and whatnot. And then he built the enterprise of the Muscular Dystrophy Association Telethon, and they rewarded him by throwing him off the air without comment because, like all organizations, eventually gangsters take them over, in my opinion. And the gangsters then rob the Treasury by taking themselves on private jet rides, traveling, let us say, to Thailand to visit sex clubs in order to investigate better work for their charity, meeting with their counterparts the same way that our governmental officials meet with their counterparts in Brussels and go to sex clubs and then come back and tell us that the trip was important for the public service that they do for us. Now, I'm not casting any aspersions on the Muscular Dystrophy Association in itself, because I don't know anybody in the organization, nor do I imply in any way that any of them are corrupt. But I do have to ask why they would take a man, an icon such as Jerry Lewis, and throw him off the air without even saying why. You'd think if he was finished, you'd think that if he was finished, why would they not have him on for one last appearance where everyone could throw some money at the charity itself and say goodbye to Jerry? Why would they just throw him under the bus like that? He never used a dirty word. He never used a filthy word. He never had to resort to that level in order to get laughter out of people. And yet he raised, they say, billions of dollars for this charity. And his reward, before the genre of reality shows, he was doing a reality show. Before there was video retailing, before there was QVC, it was Jerry Lewis. Before there was the round-the-clock TV companionship of the Weather Channel, there was Jerry Lewis's telethon. It went on and on and on for 24 hours, and people would turn it on in the middle of the night and see if he was still on, and their hearts would be tugged. They'd be full of suspense. Would Jerry be able to make it to the end of the show without going to pieces? Would the level of pledges outdo the year before? Everybody was tuned into that one way or the other. Why did they dump him? Why did this happen? Nobody knows. The fact of the matter is, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, whoever runs it right now, owes the American people an explanation. So again, I could throw it to you and ask you who is a funny guy to you or a funny woman in the world today who is not filthy, or questions related to this. I also threw out some political topics that none of you responded to. Tony Blair's sister-in-law sounding like a mad jihadist, giving meaning to the word Londonistan, explaining in part why the ruling degenerate elite of England decided to ban the conservative American commentator and brilliant author Michael Savage, all pointed out, by the way, in a fiction disclosure in Abuse of Power, coming 2 weeks to your bookstore. And I'm going to ask you, by the way, when that book hits the bookstore, I'm going to ask you to go out and clean it out off the shelves. You're going to send a message to the New World Order, and you're going to do it for me. Don't do it today. I'm holding my fire. Just as Obama's holding his fire for months before the election, I am asking you to hold off until that book is in the store, and I want you to go in like locusts, and I want you to clean the shelves out. And I want you to send the message that we are conservatives and we read books. Don't mess with us. Texas, CJ, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I think because Jerry Lewis, he's clean, like you've been saying. And yeah, also, I think it's just time for him to go, but they don't have the decency to let him go in an honorable way like you were suggesting. Don't realize how much money they could raise on his last show. And my
Let's say he's 85 and he's been sick. We saw he blew up like a balloon from some disease he had where he had to take steroids, and we were shocked by it, right? But still in all, that unto itself has a high degree of compassion involved. And your heart would be pulled by a guy in his last swan song, right? I mean, even people who never gave $10 would send a $10 bill to that. Why are they just throwing them out piteously like this?
Michael, I have no idea, but I can answer your political question. In England, they banned you because there's more of the Islamic people than Michael Savage's in Britain. They don't want to hear what you have to say, period.
Well, CJ, let me send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Thank you for that call. Stay on the line. I've got a lot of copies I'm going to be giving out around publication time of my new novel, and I know many of you are going to buy it. You know why I want it to be a bestseller? You're going to say, oh, because you're like everyone else, you want money. Okay, yes, fine. That's really not going to change my lifestyle. Those who know me know that. I'm telling you point blank, they know that. It wouldn't change one iota. I wouldn't eat an additional meal. I wouldn't buy a new boat. I wouldn't buy a new car. I don't want any of that. I'd like a new dentist. I don't know that you are making my novel number one is going to get me a new dentist, but let's put that aside. I want it to be so big that even the left-wingers of Hollywood have to bid on the book and turn it into a movie. And the reason I want Abuse of Power to become a movie is because I want the world to see an incredible film, an action film on the highest level. I mean, I've seen some I really loved. I loved Liam Neeson in Taken, for example, where his daughter is snatched by Albanian Muslims and he goes on a vengeance, on a manhunt. Incredible movie. I loved it. You know, who could play my Jack Hatfield character? Kiefer Sutherland is somebody that comes to mind because he's the right age bracket. My hero's in his 40s, by the way, so there's no one older that could play it. Maybe Mel Gibson in his early days, but I don't know that, you know, that day is gone. Anyway, there's so much that I want to talk about. I'm going to start to read more of that book as the weeks go on. We're coming into Labor Day. I intend to be here with you all of this week now that I'm through with the torture chamber from yesterday, but I'm going to another torturer on Thursday to see what the first torturer did. I want to find out what the first torturer did to me over and over again, and then I'll find out what the second torturer, who I hear is better, is going to tell me about the first torturer. That'll be Thursday. It'll be a good show when you hear the next one that looks into, oh, I can't take it anymore. As Shakespeare said, there are seven stages of life for man, and let us hope I'm not in the seventh stage of life, which ends with sans eyes, sans teeth, sans everything. I'll be right back.
Savage. What's the success of religion? Drama. That cat brought that tore out. Well, that's with a beard. Now, don't be cut so with a, you know, princeton suit. And it shall be said that children of this royale today, we noticed in the anaster, and I talk to them, and they just digress and get away from religion and get cute, you know, and they start building projects. And then it gets to be no shul at all. There's been a lot of talk about, is there a God? We don't know. That's not what we're here for. We're here to build a new Jewish community center. Now, then it goes, Christ most well, what is that? That's for fallen already.
That was Lenny Bruce on religion. I mean, he made me crazily funny. The guy was funny. I mean, come on. Now, it got him in a lot of trouble. He was the first to take on organized religion, as you well know, Judaism in particular, because he was Jewish, and then Christianity when he attacked the Pope. Then, of course, they found him with a spike in his arm in his Hollywood Hills house, where I think the gunite was still wet on the pool bottom. But the fact is, some say he was OD'd by someone else. I think he was just a junkie who, you know, killed himself, which is terribly tragic because the man was great. He opened the door to a lot of people. But we're talking about comedy today, and it goes to the Jerry Lewis thing of the weekend's coming up, Labor Day, right? You think of barbecue. But I remember this was an iconic American tradition. The Labor Day Telethon, Jerry Lewis and all of his pals and, you know, in Hollywood. Now, admittedly, that was a long time ago and he was old and he was over the hill. But why would they throw him out and not even give him a swan song? A last appearance, the last show, right? Even a skinflint such as you listening to this show. Let's say a good liberal like you who stiffs everyone in restaurants and gives taxi drivers 2% tips. Even you might send a $5 bill if Jerry Lewis was up there and in a certain way pulling your heartstrings saying it was his last show. Even if you lived in Boca Raton and you were voting in two elections illegally and collecting two Social Security checks, one for you and one for your dead wife, even you might have sent $10 for the first time in your 85th year if Jerry Lewis was allowed to go on for the last time, but he isn't. And so we're talking about those things, you know. Sacramento, Ben, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, a couple of things. Number one, we've known this was going to be his last year for a year or more. He mentioned it last time. Two, I understand he's going to be there in a seat of honor, just not as active as he used to be. But what I really called originally to say was I'm a longtime fan of Jerry Lewis, loved him for many, many years. I've worked on the local telethon edition here in Sacramento. But in show business, there's a rule. You have to know when to get off. And his time to get off was about 6 years ago. He's become an embarrassment to himself and to his memory. just like poor old Dick Clark has become since his stroke.
Mm.
You know,
this is one of the best calls I've ever had in my life, because I've noted that myself. That I'm not talking about Jerry Lewis in particular. I still think he should do a last show and appear and get the accolades, you know, and that kind of thing. But they're not announcing why he's going. But, you know, you are right. There are people who should never be seen again. And primarily it's old actors who substitute their talent for left-wing politics. It happens primarily in women who were once beautiful. And I jokingly said, and not so jokingly, that the lower the derriere, the higher the political quotient, the higher the liberalism. So the LD is inversely proportionate to the other side. For example, we saw a once beautiful girl, what was her name? I forget. Today she protested an oil pipeline running from Alaska to America. And she was out on the front lines. I mean, the girl should not have been seen anymore. Many of them know when to disappear. Most of them don't. I agree with you.
Well, I'm a professional speaker, and there's a group of us who have been friends over the years, and we have a pledge between us. When it's time for one of us to go, the others will tell him. And we've told a couple over the years, and one we didn't get to in time, and he died on stage.
I'm not laughing at him. That's funny in a way. I mean, because, Ben, I got to tell you, I am in the entertainment business. Irrespective of my educational background and my educational fervor, I do entertain people, or else I wouldn't have lasted this long, nor would my audience still be here. You have to admit that. But, Ben, I have to ask myself, who's going to tell me when it's time for me to leave the stage? I work alone. How will I know?
You want me to call?
No, you're good. Come on, Ben. How do you know? How do you know these things? You're good at what you do.
Thank you. I really think you need somebody that you love and trust who has your best interests at heart.
Teddy, the man is talking about you. Okay, so Teddy will tell me when it's time to go. I've heard of seeing eye dogs. We will give Teddy an honorary name of the last goodbye dog. How's that?
Excellent.
I'll be back.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
St. Louis team, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third.
That's what I want to find out. I want you to tell me the names of the fellas on the St. Louis team.
I'm telling you, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third.
Do you know the fellas' names?
Yes.
Well, then who's playing first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The fellow playing first base for St. Louis.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
Well, what are you asking me for?
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you, who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who is on first?
Have you got a first baseman on first?
Certainly.
Then who's playing first?
Absolutely.
Well, that's the famous Who's on First by Abbott and Costello. Notice it was a play on words. Still funny if you have a semi-literate mind. Not funny if you're a fan of Chris Rock or, let us say, Louis C.K., the degenerates of our time, in my estimation, or the self-derogatory type of comedians that we see passing themselves off as comics when they're just smearing their own religion or their own race in order to get a laugh out of a bunch of stoners sitting in the audience. And we're talking about comedy because the Labor Day thing's coming up, and it's tied into the telethon that Jerry Lewis is off the air. And we're asking why they threw him off the air. I mean, it's an interesting conversation. So we're talking about comedy, tragedy. And I played some political sound bites on the Savage Nation, if you missed it, that are equally as comedic. And it's hard to pick which ones are more comedic than others. But I would say that if we play clip one, you'll also see comedy in the political arena. Listen to clip one.
Having ended our combat mission in Iraq and removed more than 100,000 troops so far, we'll remove the rest of our troops by the end of this year, and we will end that war.
See, this is being comedic in the political arena. I mean, nothing could be better. You have to understand how funny these things are. We then have the tremendous humor of the government, the federal government, now calling themselves the federal family. Here is White House Press Secretary Jay Blarney and Big Sis Janet Napolitano now calling the government a federal family. I'm not making it up. This is great comedy in the political arena. Listen to clip 24.
Making sure that all resources available, all aspects of the federal family are focused on this.
The Department of Homeland Security will continue working to coordinate the federal response through FEMA, making sure that the entire federal family is working as one.
Well, we're coming back from the alley about 2, 3 in the morning. We stopped in Denny's. We had a couple of eggs, a couple of bacon, you know, a couple of coffee there, girls and I, throwing some balls around. And we try to figure out how to reposition ourselves. You know, it's 2, 3 in the morning, the pickup truck. And one of the girls come up with the idea to not call ourselves federal government because the word government's become kind of a no-no, like a dirty word. So one of the kiddies in the car came up with the idea of federal family. I thought it was pretty good, so I figured I'd run with it today. You know, figure August 30th, no one's listening. So we're going to run it up the flagpole today for the dummies and see how they react to the word federal family. 1-800-449-8255. Also comedic in the political arena is Mitt Romney going into Texas on Perry Turf into Texas to speak to veterans of foreign wars at the VFW annual convention in San Antonio. And at this, the comedian Mitt Romney assails career politicians. No, this is, we don't have the soundbite, but this is getting good. And here we have Perry, who he himself, I think, distinguished himself with many, many years in the military and has done very good on jobs and whatever in Texas. And here's Mitt Romney, who's been in politics all of his life, saying that he's against the career politicians. So there's no question why Romney is on the way down and why Perry is on the way up, and also why the Amway lady, whose name I forget, Sarah Romney. What's her name? Sarah Palin? Not Sarah Palin, not the Texan. Sarah Bachman or Michelle. I'm joking. I know who it is. I'm mixing the names up now. Sarah Bachman or Michelle Perry. I don't know. Whatever the ladies' names are, they're finished. All they can do is derail Perry for the Democrats, and don't be fooled because that's what they're going to be used for, incidentally. And so let's focus on the fact that it should be Perry versus Obama, and Perry wins hands down. Because although Perry will not come on this show, he goes on Wahlbanger's show, he goes on other such shows of people with dim lights in their marquee. I really don't care. For the sake of the country, I will put my ego and pride aside and say I would back Perry whether he comes on the show or not, because he's a better candidate. It's as simple as that. And so if you'd like to talk about any of these topics, I think we can do so. But before we do, let's entertain you with a little Lenny Bruce to show you what comedy was when comedy was king.
What's the success of religion? Drama. And that cat brought that tore out. Boy, that's with a beard. Now, don't be cuts with a, you know, Princeton suit. And it shall be said that children of Israel today, we noticed in Yanastir, and I talk to them, and they just digress and get away from religion and get cute, you know, and they start building projects, and then it gets to be no shul at all. There's been a lot of talk about, is there a God? We don't know. That's not what we're here for. We're here to build a new Jewish community center. Now, then it goes, Christ must, well, what is that? That's for fallen already. Christ is confused. My route took me through Spanish Harlem, Moses. What were 50 Puerto Ricans doing living in one room? When this man has a ring on worth $10,000, why are not the Puerto Ricans living in this building? That is the purpose of church for the people, the purpose of government for the people, church for the people. Now, Christ and Moses really debating, arguing back and forth. Moses is still whacked out from a mezuzah he broke open and found nothing inside. How long has this been going on?
God only knows.
How corrupt. They knew no one breaks them open. They just found one. Had a piece of paper said made in Japan.
All right, you got to admit, if you were a kid 18 years old and you hear this stuff, it's so irreverent, you have to love the guy, which you do. Of course, I think it had a lot to do with people turning away from religion. His irreverence turned people away from religion. But he did say things that were amazingly important to have been said at that time, such as, don't ask the rabbi about God because that's no longer their mission. Their mission is to build a community center, or such things, the same with the church. And it's interesting how in his overlap he compared religion to government, where he said organized religion and organized government, in essence, are one and the same. They both claim to serve the people when, in fact, they really don't serve the people, you know. So we're all over the place today with interesting stories. Very soon we'll play something very interesting for you, which is an interview I did with the one and only Steve Allen a number of years ago before he died. I interviewed him about clean comedy as opposed to the pornography today that passes for comedy. I thought that was very interesting. And then, of course, we're still focused on Jerry Lewis. Why did they throw him out without explanation? New York, WOR. Jackie, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation from WOR.
Yes, this is me, Michael, and I'm with my mom, and Jerry Lewis saved my mom a long time ago. I just lost my father 3 months ago. And my mom is here. Her name is Sylvia, and she's going to tell you the story. Go ahead.
Well, are you ready to hear it? Are you ready?
Yeah, well, how old? Yeah, okay, I'm ready, yeah.
I want Jerry to hear it. You're talking about he was 18. Well, we were younger than that. If it happened in Lakewood, New Jersey, at Laurel and the Pine, I was ice skating, and I fell through the ice, and I was drowning, and he saved my life, and he gave me 70 years of life.
Wait. Jerry Lewis jumped in the lake and saved you?
He certainly did. His father was an entertainer in Lakewood at the time. He was only about 17 years old. He's got a scar on his right hand all the way through on the palm of his hand. He will remember me when he sees it. And I've seen him once or twice over the years, once in Turnberry and Aventura.
Isn't that an amazing story? You actually fell through the ice in New Jersey when you were a girl, and Jerry Lewis jumped in before he was known and saved you?
Right. And he took me back to my hotel room, and I started going out with his actual appearance. And then
is amazing, Jackie. That's an astonishing testimonial today on the Savage Nation. I only wish that Jerry Lewis could hear this. I doubt very much that he listens to a conservative political program such as this. I would suspect that he's probably on the other side of the spectrum and wouldn't be caught listening to the Savage Nation, but at least you made your statement. How come you're listening to me? Because your son makes you or because you like me?
My
statement is not...
Yeah, what? Yes?
Let my mother finish because I just lost my father.
Listen to me.
Okay, I got to go now. Now it's already getting too personal. It's like, see, this is the beauty of talk radio. I couldn't hear them well. It was no longer good radio because I imagine you have to have, I told you, another sense in your head in radio. There's no live audience. So I have to think for you. I have to hold a person as long as I can on the show where I think you're still listening. And when I think already you can't hear them, already you heard enough or it's getting too personal, I say goodbye. And why? Because you're going to hang up. You're going to go listen to someone who sounds like Groucho Marx's grandmother getting a hysterectomy without anesthesia, and I can't have that happen. I'd rather you listen to the best instead of someone who copied everything I've ever done. I'll be right back.
Savage.
My wife is never happy with the housework. I bought electric iron, electric dishwasher, electric dryer. She said, too many gadgets around the house, she had no place to sit down. What did I do? Bought her electric chair. She's crazy about furs. We found a furrier who does his own breeding. He crossed a mink and a gorilla. Got a beautiful fur coat, but the sleeves are too long. My wife went to the beauty parlor. She got a mud pack. For 2 days, she looked nice. Then the mud fell off.
Now, why is this stuff funny? Did he have to say the F word? Did he have to sound like a degenerate Chris Rock, a filth dirtbag like Louis K? Did he have to sink down to making jokes about his own daughter's sexuality? No, he didn't have to do that. It's because he had good comedy writers who had a clean sense of humor, and people will laugh if it's funny. You can be sick, you can be dirty, but it's still not funny. It's just sick. That's not the same thing as funny. And that's why we're talking about comedy today, when comedy was clean, because you say, clean comedy, is it funny? Yes, it is. Yes, you can be clean and sarcastic and satiric and make people laugh if you have a sense of the language and if you're talking to a literate audience, which brings me to the point I have been trying to make all day. America is now more illiterate than it has ever been. It is also illiterate, more so illiterate than it has ever been. It's easy to laugh at filthy, dirty statements. It's not easy to laugh at something that requires thought. But because our school system are filled with teachers themselves who cannot command the English language, how can you expect the children to grow up with a command of the English language sufficient to even understand a joke that doesn't resort to the F word, the B word, the F word, and the B word? Every other word, F and B and A. That's not funny. That's the mark of an illiterate, illiterate nation, a product of a debased educational system. The people who were who went to school in the World War II era were far more literate with a grammar school education than most Ivy League bachelor's degrees are today, to show you how bad this country has become. I read Shakespeare in high school, in Jamaica High School. I read Plato in Jamaica High School. I had to read them. I had to read them. I had to know a certain level. I had to learn at a certain level because there were standards, there were exams, there were Regents exams. What do they have today? You give them an exam and they scream that it's racism. You give them an exam and they say that it's a bias, it's a prejudice in order to make someone be able to read and write. And therefore, they can't become a cop or a fireman, or better yet, how about a president? You ask yourself why we're in the trouble we're in? Don't look any further than what's going on in the White House. West Palm Beach, Florida. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Listen, besides everything else, you are a very clean comedian. I love when you do that dumb land security. It is beautiful.
No, that's not her. What, with that voice? The girls and I were coming back from the lane. Do you like?
I love the coming back from the lane. They were just bowling down in Virginia. I don't know where the heck is she now.
It's not her. I'm not ridiculing her. That has nothing to do with the Department of Homeland Security. It's just somebody, a figment of my imagination, John. But thank you very much. The federal family were coming back from the lanes. That was fun. That's probably how it did happen. Where else do you think they came? Who would come up with a thing like that but somebody who went to a Yale? Illinois, Pete, you're on the Savage Nation from Chicago. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks for listening to me. I like Bill Cosby and Red Skelton. It's just the continued devaluing of America's ideals and standards. And I mean, you look at
that's right. Well, that's right. Bill Cosby never said a dirty word, and he had a huge audience. That's right.
You look at what was on the MTV award show the other night. It's just sick.
I never watch it because it's all aimed at the illiterate or illiterate stoner who wants to hear the F word or the A word or the B word. That's the key. The key things they've been raised to think are funny. If someone says that on the stage, they think that's humor. It's not humor. Again, I want to go back to satire. You know, I once won the Freedom of Speech Award. You forgot that. It's a big deal. I never talk about my awards. It's okay. It's boring. But I think in 07, I was granted the Freedom of Speech Award by the Talkers magazine before whatever. And in this, it was a seminal speech on what the meaning of satire and sarcasm, what does satire mean? What does sarcasm mean? Guys, I'll tell you what we should do. We have so much to do in the time that remains. Could you get that speech ready on satire and sarcasm for my Freedom of Speech Award? And then we'll go back to some of the other incredible sound bites that we have. Quickly, Scott in Pittsburgh, fire away about Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis, poor Jerry, you know, just like you said, he was a comedic genius. The man was so funny. He did it. He was a total buffoon, but everything he did was funny. And people stopped appreciating physical humor and simple, you know, simple things that are funny.
So the contortionism of his youth no longer appealed to the audiences.
Yeah, and well, more than that, I think when he had the steroid problem and he blimped out, everybody kind of lost a little respect for him. And
it was no longer Jerry Lewis; it was a different persona. That's interesting. I want to define satire, ridicule, and sarcasm for those of you who love talk radio. Satire is the use of irony, sarcasm, ridicule, or the like in exposing, denouncing, or deriding vice, folly, etc. What is ridicule? We use it on talk radio all the time if we know how. It is speech or action intended to cause contemptuous laughter at a person or thing. Derision. Derision, my friends, is ridicule. That's part of freedom of speech. And finally, sarcasm should be used all the time if you know how to do it. What is sarcasm? Harsh or bitter derision or irony. A sharply ironical taunt, sneering or cutting remark, a review full of sarcasms. That's freedom of speech, my friends.
Savage.
Now, if you actually analyze that, that was for my Freedom of Speech Award, you'll see why the comedians today revert to F words or such. They're not capable of satire or sarcasm. They cannot do harsh or bitter derision because they don't have the horsepower, the brain power, the educational capacity. In fact, they're too lazy to do it. It takes mental energy to be able to use satire or sarcasm. And unfortunately, it's not a currency that's prevalent today. So let's go back to the next point here on the Savage Nation of comedy, both political comedy and stage comedy. I want to play for you an interview that you're not going to believe. I haven't heard it in 10 years or more. January 2000, I had just started in national talk radio. I'd been on a local station since 94. And in January of 2000, I interviewed Steve Allen. And listen to what he has to say about comedy. Right now, I guess we have our guest, one of my favorites, Mr. Steve Allen. Is Mr. Allen with us?
Yes. How you doing?
Steve, I grew up on you, you know.
Well, get off me.
You know, I saw a full-page ad that an organization had put out where you are appalled at, I guess, what, filthy language and filthy images on television? Is that the primary motivation?
On television and radio, yeah, especially in regard to how it will be exposed to children. If everybody on Earth were 57, it's none of my business. But we got a lot of kids listening to this stuff and seeing it.
And what would you like done?
Well, to talk about ideals, I'd like everybody to knock it off, but the world has never run that way. Sometimes people have talked to me the last 3 or 4 days about the ad, and they said, hey, this is pretty heavy, hard-hitting stuff. And I thought back to an old joke that I think goes back to about the turn of the century when there were a lot of country jokes. A farmer has a notoriously stubborn mule which can't be trained to do anything, does whatever it wants. So a guy comes along and says, I can take care of that mule for you. I can fix it. So the farmer says, go ahead. So the guy picks up a club, gives the poor mule a terrible whack over the head. And the farmer says, why'd you do that? And the guy says, well, first you got to get their attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old line.
Now, are you suggesting that you whack Hollywood over its head with a stick?
Not entire Hollywood, but in a sense, yeah. What I've done with the ad, in other words. And by the way, I'm only the one who signed the ad and is glad to send out that message. It's placed by an organization called the Parents Television Council.
Hmm.
They came to me after having become aware of my own views on the subject, which are remarkably like their own, about 10 years ago when the L.A. Times had heard that I feel this way, and I'm only one of dozens, by the way, in the comedy business who does. They asked me to write a piece for them, so I did. The morning that it was published, I got a phone call at my office from Mort Saul, who's an old friend, but I hadn't seen him in some time. I couldn't get him off the phone. He said, thank God somebody finally said this.
Oh, Mort Saul's one of my old-time favorites as well. I didn't think he would join you because, you know, in essence, you're taking on the Hollywood establishment.
Yeah, well, he's a gutsy guy. Well, not all of the establishment, but, yeah, there's a lot of power here and a lot of commercial power, so I know what I'm doing.
But, Steve, this could result in a boycott of your work and of Mort's work. You could have the equivalent of McCarthyism coming from the other side if you keep it up.
I do intend to keep it up, and you're absolutely right. It could come to that, but I literally don't care. First of all, I might care if I were down to my last $800, but I'm living comfortably. And when I first got to New York in 1950 to do television for CBS, it came to my attention. You'll first wonder if this has any relevance, but as soon as you hear it, you'll see why. I noticed that the mafia was basically running New York, and I don't mean that as an exaggeration. Whatever business you're talking about, the garment business, the liquor business, the laundry business, the construction business. They were deciding who ran for Congress, who could be a judge, all of that stuff.
And the food was better.
Yeah, the food was great. Yeah.
Steve, what, in your opinion, is the most horribly degrading television show? Would you care to tell us the type you're talking about?
Sure. One of them is one I haven't seen yet, although I'm going to make it my business to do so, so I'll speak more knowledgeably. I was with Jack Carter in a number of comics the other day at the Friars meeting, Friars Club meeting, and Jack just happened to say, I have just seen a situation comedy that is so dirty you wouldn't believe it. Now, this is not an altar boy. This is not Billy Graham talking.
Now, these are old vaudevillians, some of them, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, a lot of them. A lot of them go way back to the club stuff. And some of them do vulgar material, but there are no children allowed. You dig
right.
The distinction here. So anyway, I said, what is it? He said, it's a show called Sex in the City. And I've heard from other people that it's incredibly vulgar. So that would be one example. The Howard Stern show on radio or television would be another example. And I think if Howard hears what we're saying, he would not only not object, because he does that deliberately.
It's right.
Sometimes you can do a joke and you're literally surprised if somebody else is offended.
What about a Jerry Springer type of show?
Well, no, Jerry Springer is a different kind of problem, but totally revolting. And about 90% of the TV business has turned against him because we're really all a little ashamed that he would drag the whole art form down that deep into the sewer. So he's disgusting. But to get back to Howard, just briefly.
You know, Steve, I've got to interject for a minute. You know, as I say, I grew up, you were a funny man, a talented man. You did all sorts of great stuff on Saturday nights, as I spent many lonely nights alone as a boy growing up.
Thank you.
With your programs. But I didn't know that you had such good thoughts behind all that great comedy.
Well, of the 52 books I've written, very few of them have anything to do with humor. There was a serious book called Explaining China. There's one on the farm labor problem called The Ground Is Our Table.
Hmm.
There's one on white-collar crime and corruption called Rip Off. And there's a pair of books about the Bible, religion, and morality, analyzing scripture. So, yeah, I'm a human being in addition to being a comedian. But
how many songs have you published, Steve Allen?
Well, published, probably only about 1,000, but I've written about 7,500.
Jeez.
However, we have now left two important points totally dangling in midair, so if I may, I'll try to resolve them quickly. First, to go back to the reference about the mafia running New York.
Right.
Indeed, they did. So my response to that was to do a two-hour television documentary about organized crime in New York City. And some people at the time told me, they said, you're crazy, you can get killed doing this, and if not, you can suffer in other ways. It's a long story, which I won't hold up. But to this day, there are some places in the country where I am not bookable because of that program.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, there are hundreds of others where I am bookable, so there's no practical harm for that.
Mm.
But if something has to be said, it has to be said.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a new book and a CD, don't you?
No matter when you ask that question, the answer is always yes.
Steve Allen, what happened? When did the floodgates get broken open?
That part really started in the 1960s. I was hosting two talk show series after I did the Tonight Show, so I saw the changes happening on my own show. People began to say more and more, use foul language on the talk show. So I had a little comic way to deal with it. I had one of those ding bells, ding.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they would do that, I would playfully hit that as if to say, now, it's going too far. And then finally, I had to send for a police whistle because some of them wouldn't stop after the first ding or two. But that was all when it started in the early 60s. And then grain of sand at a time, it's gotten worse and worse. And now there's a good question, can we stop it at all? The answer might be no.
Mm. The forces may be too great.
They might be because there's money in it. And the problem, again, is with television, to draw a very quick analogy.
But wait, Steve, I've got to interject. Maybe there's hope. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Howard Stern's show is a bomb.
True.
Yeah, and he's as filthy as they come. He makes a vaudevillian blush.
Yeah.
He does it strictly for ratings, and yet his ratings are not too good. Well, maybe there's finally been a Waterloo here.
Well, there is a counteraction wave. In fact, it's becoming a tidal wave all over the country. I'm a very small part of it. As I've already told you, Mort Sahl feels the same way. So does Bob Newhart. And Bill Crosby is very strong on this. He thinks there's much too much vulgarity in show business. He wants clean. And there's a long list of comics. We mentioned Jack Carter. Sid Caesar feels the same way. A lot of us do. It isn't just Steve Allen against the business by any means.
Mm-hmm. Steve Allen is doing a great, great noble thing here. Here's his website. right. And the groupies with. You heard it. That was from January 2000. Steve Allen, about a year before he died, actually less than a year before he died, he was on a mission to clean up the stage. Unfortunately, it got much worse. He was right. It was a grain of sand that's now become a mistral and a storm of filth that has not been not only stopped, it's gotten out of control. But I felt that since we're living in an age where the culture wars have fundamentally been lost or given up by the conservatives in America, then it was worth maybe once this year saying one word about the degeneracy that has swept across the media landscape. If you look at the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood, you have to understand that they do not have enough steel in Korea to build a sewer pipe with enough of a diameter to transmit the sewage that is being produced as I speak in Hollywood. They are manufacturing the sewage faster than they can pump it in Hollywood. So Steve Allen, unfortunately, did his best, but it didn't work. Now on to the show itself today on the Savage Nation. Let's go to New York. Gloria in New York. Amazing. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind, Gloria, from WOR?
I made Jerry's glasses for years. Remember those aviators?
Well, you made Jerry Lewis's glasses, which, the Yahrzeit glasses or the cocktail glasses?
The what, honey?
Which glasses did you...
Aviator glasses with the prescription in it.
Oh, the eyeglasses. I thought you meant the Yahrzeit glasses.
No, Yahrzeit, no. And he wore those glasses and those aviators in the 60s. And he still wears.
Gloria, see, you are an optometrist.
Yes.
And what was it like to make Jerry Lewis's glasses for him?
Street was my shop at street level, and he would park his limo at the curb, and he'd come in and he'd kibitz with all the customers and my patients, and then he'd walk out, Michael. He'd walk out with his hands in front of him the way you do if you're pretending that you can't see a thing.
he made believe your glasses made him blind. That's terrible.
Right. I can't see a thing, he would say.
We're not mocking blind people. Even somebody who's blind would get the joke. Jerry Lewis did that. In other words, the guy was so on all the time that even in an ordinary interchange with an optometrist, he'd have to turn into a comedy act, right?
So brilliant, so wonderful. He'd call
Gloria. How many years have you been listening to my show on WOR?
Since the day you opened.
I love that. Since the day I opened, you see, you're theatrical.
Yes.
Not since the day you heard me on the radio. Since the day I opened the show, right?
Hollywood star. His pictures were in my window in the...
All right, she didn't hear a word. I thought she was talking about me. She meant him. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is very wet out there, I want to tell you.
How wet is it?
Thank you, class. Very good. It's so wet out there today, I saw a robin at a laundromat waiting for his worm to come out of the spin-dry cycle. All right, what do you got?
Just some, you know, comedians from another time. Again, no F word, no this word, no that word. Some of it's funny, some of it's funnier than other stuff, but where has the humor gone? Why did it happen? Eric in New York has an answer, actually. He's calling us from New York City, the land of the non-hurricane, from WOR. Eric, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. Let me begin by saying, hi-ho! All right.
Okay.
Comedian and comic, a big reason why there's been a change is because of technology. It began from being personal. Charlie Chaplin, Harold Lloyd, even Curly and the Three Stooges. A personal situation.
You mean the situations were personal. Okay.
Situations were personal. So the advent of technology allows greater and greater amounts of people to witness what's going on, and they become more and more used to getting away from their self and being trying to be more catching with other sorts of things, and you say profanity and so forth and so on.
So you're saying just using dirty words now substitutes for an actual situational comedy.
Exactly. That's exactly.
So for example, Charlie Chaplin as the little beggar, or Harold Lloyd in the Clock Tower, anyone getting caught up in a certain mess physically was a personally comedic event. And now with the advent, I think it's maybe you're hitting something on that with the advent of the comedy clubs where there's nothing personal. It's who can outshock the audience. Yeah. Isn't it really about saturation, shock saturation? Who can be dirtier? Who can be filthier? Who can race to the sewer faster?
Correct. Exactly correct.
Or then you see the sad case of the girl comedians who insult their own ethnicity. There's a Korean comedian whose name I would not mention. Her entire shtick is how funny Korean people are, and people laugh at that. I don't understand why she would do it, number one, other than to get, you know, make a buck. But why is that funny to laugh at Korean people? Why did that become funny? It's the same, I think, as Larry David mocking Jews, don't you think?
They're losing their sense of self. It's not amount of laughing at a situation. It's amount of laughing at another self. And that's the tragedy.
Are you in psychiatry?
I'm not in psychiatry, but I have studied the field, and I have...
It's an interesting observation. I don't know that you actually completed the description to the extent that the audience will understand it any more than I actually did. But I would like to think about it at another time and see if I can develop it a little further. 1-800-449-8255. Play Chris Rock and Molesters on the Savage Nation.
Everybody got that one molester, Uncle. And you know, your mama's like, where them kids at? They were Johnny. Get them kids! Get them kids! Hurry up! Get them kids! Don't you leave them with your Uncle Johnny!
Hey, now that's not funny. That's hysterical. It's not funny. That's just not funny. It's hysterical. Yet the audiences apparently can't get enough of Chris Rock or Barack Obama. It's the same audience, by the way. The same exact audience, incidentally. All right, let's go to the callers again on the Savage Nation. Pennsylvania, Brad, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, how are you?
Good. Go ahead, please.
All right, I just wanted to make one comment. I mean, you know, I'm 37 years old. I grew up, you know, with all the Chris Rock and everything like that. And to me personally, there's nothing more fun. I mean, I would rather spend the whole night listening to, you know, the Carol Burnett Show reruns or you know, anything in the original geniuses of what I call comedy. You know, the shtick from the Rat Pack to just, you know, Bob Newhart. That is pure comedy gold to me.
And you're a younger guy, so it's the old statement that I make, the Savage Nation, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight, resonates with you.
Exactly. I mean
it was a different age, believe me. When the chrome was thick and the women were straight. I guess it's different strokes for different folks. And as a result of the debasement of the culture and the illiteracy, we've come to this point. I don't think I'm going to change the world by having done a show like today, but I thought it was an interesting shot at trying to define what's going on. And as a side note, in all of this discussion that we've had today about comedy, the kings of comedy, where is Jerry Lewis? Why did they throw the guy off without a goodbye song, in essence? Something else is very pregnant in the air. And because I'm still on medication from the dental experience, I can't remember what it is. But I'm sure that by tomorrow I will awaken in the middle of the night in a cold sweat and say, God, why did I even say that if I couldn't remember what I was going to say? But hopefully by tomorrow the meds will be worn off and I'll remember what I was going to say today. I hope you've enjoyed thus far. Stay tuned for another big hour of the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's what's in the news. Middle East war moves. Israel moves ships. Iran moves ships. Did you hear about that? Gaddafi is still on the run. They can't find him. The ATF head behind the gun running operation to Mexico was he was fired. Fired. No. Demoted. Actually, not even demoted. He was kept on the payroll with full pension and moved to another position inside the U.S. family. I mean the U.S. government. They're now calling themselves the family, not the government. The last family I heard of was they're calling it the, what is it? Big Sis now says what does she call it, Charles? The family? The U.S. family? The federal family. The last family I heard of was the Corleones and the Godfather and the Sopranos. So now we have a federal family that we should be proud of. Or else. Yes, the or else that worries me. Hey, if you think that's bad, how about identity theft? What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now, 1-800-LOCK-485, and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call now. Romney is trying to act like he's not Romney. He's trying to outdo Perry in being more Perry than Perry, which is really astounding, since Perry is a real veteran who spoke to the VFW, and Romney is not a veteran speaking to the VFW. And now it's just getting crazy. Who cares? What else is in the news? Former male porn star fired from substitute teaching in a middle school. I guess he'll have to go to work for the Obama administration, the Department of Health and Human Services. He would know a lot about that. Of course, you know about Obama's illegal alien uncle who was arrested. And he was arrested, and he had a valid Social Security ID and a driver's license, even though he was not a citizen. He had a previous deportation order, but he is Obama's uncle. So take a look at the picture of him on michaelsavage.com. There are many other stories we should look at on the website that are worth talking about. And, a legal alien, Obama's illegal alien uncle, arrested for DUI, had a legitimate Social Security ID. After nearly hitting a cop, he was arrested. Gaza terrorists are getting anti-plane arms from Libya. Abuse of power. Review, it held me spellbound. It's coming out in less than 2 weeks. I can hardly believe it. Journalism, terrorism, patriotism. Just how far up does the abuse of power reach? You want an exciting read? Well, you could read it for free, actually, on michaelsavage.com. If you like the chapter, order it before it's sold out in your bookstore. Abuse of Power by me. Obama has tour buses flown to stump speeches. To make it look like he rides a bus. What a federal family we have. Obama's proposed regulations would cost $1 billion a year. Did Uncle Omar benefit from Dukakis' fake ID policy? That's Omar Obama. The nice picture of the Obama family, the extended family. They received dummy SS numbers to collect benefits. Isn't that great? Some of them are wearing African garb because you wouldn't want to take away ethnicity. Speaking of morons, psychotics, lunatics, Tony Blair's sister-in-law incites Muslims to liberate Jerusalem. See, she converted to Islam. As I told you, there's a reason Michael Savage was banned in England. It's because there's no England anymore. It is definitely Londonistan. And there are rumors that this convert to Islam goes much higher up in the royal family. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even Big Ears himself may have done it. Storm was hyped by the media. Savage is the only man who said cut it out already. Approval of Obama at all-time low. No kidding. Obama nominates a professor who knows nothing about running lemonade stands to head the Economic Advisors Council. What else is in the news here on michaelsavage.com? Teens target cyclists in knockout game. Another politician resigns amid a nude photo scandal. Let's see. He's pictured with Bill Clinton, therefore he must be a Democrat. Puerto Rico Senator Robert Arango resigns amid nude photo scandal. Pics surface from gay app Grindr. Oh, really? That shouldn't be grounds for resignation. I mean, after all, if it was a heterosexual sending nude pictures, yes. But to be featured in an iPhone app for gays and bisexuals, I think it's discrimination. Because you have to hold people to separate standards, don't you? In Animal Farm, here he is. Here. Puerto Rico Senator Robert Arango wouldn't say if the picture that appeared on gay dating site Grindr included the one above or of him. Don't go to michaelsavage.com and look at it, because it's disgusting. It's not pornographic. He's just an ordinary fat middle-aged guy with an iPhone. Drunk man sues Hustler Club over nearly $30,000 bill. That's exciting. What else is in the news? Well, we got plenty of news for you. China's military, you're not interested. The death of the Navy SEALs, you don't care who did that. You don't care who put them all on a single helicopter. What do you care about that? Where's Nancy Pelosi on vacation? Israel sends two warships to Egyptian border is really the big news, because they know what's coming. And Iran has sent warships to meet the Israeli ships. Isn't that nice? Following intelligence indicating a viable terror threat. Meanwhile, Iran is set to send the 15th Fleet to the area as well to thwart pirate activity. That's awful. Just awful. This is just awful. But then again, we shouldn't pay any attention to this, because whether Israel or Iran go to war is not as important as which whore in Hollywood fell down and her skirt flew up. Take a look at Iranian's Hitler president, Mahmoud, another Ahmadinejad, aboard the 15th Fleet submarine. They're going to war. Hitler is back. He's alive. But why should you care? Why should you care? It doesn't matter. Israel's problem. It's their fault. It's not Iran, not the Palestinians. There's no Egyptian peace deal at all. So that's it. All this and more on today's Savage Nation.
Savage.
Lion of the Desert, old movie, 1981. It's stunning. It's an amazing film. Anthony Quinn, Oliver Reed. But the director was an Arab. I think he was Iranian, Mustafa Akkad. He was a director-producer. Phenomenal movie. Rod Steiger as Mussolini in the opening scenes is worth the entire film. The glory, the glory of the settings, you know, the imperial settings of the fascist dictatorship, are fantastic to watch, just fantastic. And the dignity of his opponent in this Bedouin, this Muslim Bedouin, played by Anthony Quinn, as I said to you, Lionel, that is astounding. A guerrilla fighter, in other words, Omar Mukhtar, Anthony Quinn, who committed himself to a war that cannot be won in his lifetime, meaning he knows he can't win against the Italians. But he fights them to his death, 20 years in the hills and in the deserts. And as I say, when they are about to hang him, when the sentence is given down to him by the guy who plays the General Rodolfo Graziani, Oliver Reed, he says, "I will outlive the hangman." He said, "Then you will have to fight my son and my son's son and then my son's son's son, because you will never occupy our land." And he said, no country has the right to occupy another country. So, you know, it so resonated with me, this movie. I wouldn't say it changed my view of the world. I mean, I've had a pretty clear view of what's going on in the world prior to this. But the fact of the matter is that if you actually think that we're going to subdue the Afghanis and make them into happy camel burger proprietors, you know, what do you envision, a chain of camel burger stands in Afghanistan? You're going to take these tribal people who are living in a thousand years ago, you're going to turn them into Burger King, Camel King, whatever. It's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. So there's much more at stake than this democracy movement in the Middle East. I don't really believe that's it anyway. It has to do with many other geopolitical elements that we know nothing about. Oil, opium, you can name it and pretty much figure it out. But it has nothing to do, or very little to do, with the, bringing democracy to the Middle East, because look at what happened in Iraq. That's democracy? You call Iraq a democracy right now? Ask the Christians who are dying in Iraq if it's a democracy. You talk the Arab Spring is the spread of a democracy? Take a look. Ask the Christians and the Coptic Christians in Egypt if it's a democracy that Hillary Clinton and George Soros and Jimmy Carter and Brzezinski have instigated. So as I say to you, you know, let's look at things clearly. I don't know what we're doing there anymore. I didn't know what we were doing there 2 years ago. I said we should get out of Afghanistan, incidentally. I'm on record anyway having said that, so I'm not going to change it all of a sudden to make you think I said something else. Because it was a zero-sum game. There was no winning there. It's known as the graveyard of empires. And the fact of the matter is our empire is in such trouble right now, we don't need to be another one of the empires buried in the graveyard of Afghanistan. You know, these wars have bankrupted this country. You just analyze the cost of Iraq. How many trillions of dollars did it cost us to give the Iraqis their freedom, so-called, to liberate the Shia Muslim from the Sunni oppression? How many trillions did it cost us, and what did we get for it? Tell me what we got for it. Did they give us so much as a barrel of oil? In a previous book of mine, I called for reparations from Iraq. Bush lied. When he said at the beginning of the outset of the war, rather, he said, we will get reparations in the form of oil. They didn't send us one free barrel of oil. In fact, they stabbed us in the back after they were liberated in Iraq, and they gave the first oil contracts to China. So where's the reparations? And let alone the men who came back in caskets or in pieces or lost their bodies and their souls in Iraq. We haven't gotten anything economically from those people. Why? Where's the will of our leadership to say, you know what, you owe us money, it's overdue, it's $3 trillion, and we want oil, and we're taking it, and we have the military to do it, and if you don't like it, you know what, let's meet you on the battlefield. We're just taking the oil and siphon it right out of Iraq. Get the $3 trillion that way. You want to straighten the budget out? You can do it with Mexico, too. Mexico has the fourth largest oil reserve on the planet, the last I checked. It can be piped across the border. Why don't we demand reparations for the high social costs that the illegals have leveled upon us for the last 20 years? You want an equation? There's an equation. One barrel of oil for each illegal per year. There you go. You want a budget deficit straightened out? Now, Michael Savage, plain talking, plain thinking. Okay, I understand what needs to be done, but there's no political ability to do any of this because by the time you wind up in a position of Senate, at the Senate level, you're already so compromised, there's no way to ever hear a word of truth come out of them. Which brings me back to the radio show. After all, I'm not a politician. I'm only a radio talk show host. This is only one man's opinion. You've got to understand that. And many stations don't like very heated dialogue anymore. They're afraid of it. They want something much more moderate in tone. They want something that's more, easy listening. Easy listening. No criticism of the government. No criticism of Obama. Look the other way, strap on your rose-colored glasses, you know what I'm saying? Well, I can't help it. I'm too far into this to become somebody else. And I know that I represent the mind of the American people, especially those who listen to talk radio. I mean, I could ask you a question right now, and, you know, I can get your answers. Do you want me to become a more mellow Mike? You want me to become a more mellow talk show host? I could do that. Would you like FM Bob? I can do the old FM Bob that I used to do. Hey, you got the waterbed music. I can give him the FM Bob. Anybody got that? It doesn't matter. Well, whatever you want me to do. I mean, I'm at your disposal here. I'm not a tissue, but I'm here to entertain you, educate you. Desafinato. Play Desafinato. Desafinato. Okay, here it is. Set me up. Let me get my mind into this FM Bob. Hello, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation. This is the new Michael Savage. The new Michael Savage who is no longer inflamed by what's going on politically. We're here simply to give you a nice, easy listening experience. You're going to hear nothing but good things about our government. You're going to hear how good Dick Durbin is, and you're going to hear how wonderful Dianne Feinstein is and Dick Blum, her husband, and how they put America first. You're going to hear nothing but good about the president and how he needs a vacation in Martha's Vineyard. And the next time the first lady takes another trip, you're not going to hear a word out of my mouth about the extravagant costs or the high number of personnel who attend to her like she's a queen. You're going to hear nothing but the statements that the first lady needs that trip to Africa or to Portugal or to Spain. And ladies and gentlemen, the reason I'm doing it is because I want you to be happy with me. I want you to feel good about the Savage Nation. In fact, I want you to feel only good things about the government and about the president and about the Senate. Because I, too, am an American, and as an American, I'd like their ratings to go up. I'd like the president to be loved, not to be looked askance by anyone. And so when the president gives a speech to a group of Muslims, and he says things such as, Muslim Americans help keep us safe, I will not remind you of Major Nadal Hassan, who committed the atrocity of the Fort Hood massacre. Or when the president, at the same speech, says that Islam has always been part of our American family, I would be the last to criticize the president, for who am I to criticize a man as brilliant as he, with such a distinguished background? Who am I, a little kid from the Bronx, who grew up in an immigrant family, to know any more than this man who was born, well, somewhere on the earth, to a distinguished family, with such a loving, loving background, and with such a great love for America, a man who sat in a preacher's a house of worship for so many years, hearing how evil America was and how it disrespected minorities and how we should hate America. He must know what he's doing. He must know very much what he's doing. And so as I say, as we draw this segment to a close, this is Michael Savage in a new mellow voice. You will never hear another voice of contention coming from this speaker again. Yeah, right, okay. You just had your fantasy moment. Yeah, I could do that. So if that's what you want, I'll give you that.
Savage.
Chinese military. They make more than sneakers. In fact, they're building an aircraft carrier, submarines, and believe me, there's an awful lot going on. And to talk about China, Libya, much more, is Congressman Duncan Hunter, who represents California's 52nd Congressional District. In 2008, Hunter was elected to his first term in the House of Reps, succeeding his father, Duncan L. Hunter. In 01, Hunter joined the Marine Corps and was promoted to the rank of captain. Congressman Hunter, it's an honor to have you on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. It's great being with you today.
Are you worried about China's military advancements? I am.
Well, if we're talking long term here, I'm very worried. If we're talking short term, I'm not too worried yet. I think China has a lot of internal problems. They have an extremely wealthy coastline, because that's what they do all the business with, America. But the internal struggles in China have to do with the very poor peasant population in inner China that's away from the coast, doesn't get to deal with capitalism, and that's where the communist government there gains its power from, are the disaffected people that aren't touched by capitalism and aren't touched by free trade. And the Chinese government, the Chinese military has shown that that they're going to keep building weaponry, and they're going to keep challenging the United States' dominance of the oceans. And I think particularly, I think that the report by the Navy that they just presented to Congress shows that they're focused on Taiwan, and they're also focused defensively, but that could easily change on a dime to be an offensive setup to where China's ready to take more control of the Pacific and the South China Sea and play more of a role in that area. And that's something that the United States does not want. We don't want a challenger in that area. That's a burgeoning area. That's a burgeoning economy. And I think we have enough trouble there with countries like North Korea trying to exert their influence. But what I really think we need to do is help Taiwan and help Japan with their militaries. If they want to buy American made military hardware, like Taiwan wants to buy F-16s, we should let them buy F-16s, and then they can keep China in the box instead of us having to exert so much influence in that area to keep China in the box. But overall, I would say China is a distraction, and I think in the next decade or two, they could become a major threat and a major player. But they aren't there yet. Our job is to, one, keep them from getting to that point where they become a major player in that area militarily, maintain military dominance just in case anything bad does happen. And I don't, you know, these people that think that they can foresee the future and say that there's never going to be any kind of altercation between the United States and China because of the way that China holds American debt and the way that America supports the Chinese economy by buying all of their products that they make there, those few products that we buy at Walmart here. I think those people are short-sighted and naive to say that there can't ever be an altercation between the United States and China. You can never tell what's going to happen on the world scene. That should be the one lesson that everybody's learned from history, is that you can never tell what happens. So we always need to be prepared, and we ought to try to give China incentive to not build up their military that could be used offensively against us in the future.
How serious was the Chinese cyber attack against the U.S., and should we do anything in response?
Cyber attacks by China are actually very serious. In fact, I would say that Chinese cyber attacks are more serious than any of their actual physical military hardware. Because as anybody knows, a few hackers can disrupt a billion-dollar operation, whether it's a business or a government. So I think we ought to, I mean, that's one thing where if we cut military spending, we're not going to have enough money to provide for cybersecurity for the United States. I mean, that's a massive job, being able to protect all of our businesses, all of our banks, the stock exchange, let alone the Department of Defense, Pentagon, and all of our military electronic assets. That is a huge undertaking, and cutting defense by anything, literally, is going to cut back on cybersecurity and the United States' ability to defend against a few people. I mean, we're talking China might have 100 or 200 people working on hacking American enterprise and American government, but that's all it takes. So we need to stay on our toes, and we need to make sure that we are secure against every threat, including cyber threat.
What will these defense cuts do to our military?
Even if the super committee comes up with something that gets passed, I'm fairly certain that the super committee is going to have defense cuts in its solution that it comes up with. So in its solution set, it's probably going to have, I don't know, it could be $100 billion up to $300 billion of defense cuts in its solutions. And if that solution set, if that bill doesn't pass Congress, then as everybody knows, we hit what's called sequestration. And that means we're going to cut $600 billion, which will equal $1 trillion if you count the cuts that were made this year, over the next 10 years. So it's $1 trillion over 10 years, $100 billion a year roughly. It's going to kill the American military. It's going to hollow out the force. People need to realize that America is the lone superpower. And the reason we're a superpower and the reason we have economic dominance over the rest of the world is because we control the oceans. America controls everything from the South China Sea to the Mediterranean to the Caribbean if we wanted to. We're the ones who secure the trade lanes. We're the ones that are able, the only country in the entire world that's able to sustain a navy that covers all of the world's oceans and all of the world's straits, basically those choke points where a small country could stop trade from going from one, like the Mediterranean to the Atlantic. We have to make sure that we keep those trade lanes open, and that's how we keep basically all the other countries in check. And that's why we're an economic superpower, because we control the Atlantic and the Pacific. It's not just because we're nice people and people think that the dollar is a great hedge. It's because we are the sole superpower. That's what makes us important. And one of the ways that we remain a sole superpower is we control the oceans, and we control the skies, and we control space. If you start losing those things, then we start losing our dominance as the world's lone superpower.
Recently, a poll was released saying that almost 7 in 10 Americans fear another terrorist attack on U.S. soil. Is there anything more that can be done to protect this country?
Oh, absolutely. There's the two things that should have been done on September 12, 2001. One, secure the southern and northern borders. The borders between Mexico and America and Canada and America need to be secured immediately. Leave the immigration reform talk out of it. Secure the borders first, pure and simple. Secure the borders so that we know who's coming into this country and what they're bringing with them. And I want the American government to prove to the American people that after the borders are secured, that there are very few people. And, you know, you might have some Navy SEAL-trained illegal immigrants coming into this nation, but 99.9% of the immigration, the illegal immigration that's going on, can be stopped by securing the southern and northern borders. That's number one. Number two, we need to target military-age males from Muslim countries who come into this country who are not necessarily friendly to this country. It's that simple. We know who predominantly who the bad guys are. 95% of the people who want to plant bombs in stadiums and hurt American citizens are Arabs or from that part of the world, Southwest Asia, and we need to make sure that we look at those people very carefully prior to giving them student visas here or work visas in America or holiday visas, and we need to make sure that we track them while they're in this country. We should not be letting people into this country whose sole aim and whose religion states that their job is to destroy infidels, meaning Christians and Jews.
The UN will be voting soon on whether or not to recognize a Palestinian state, which China has already announced support for. I mean, do you actually believe the Israelis would survive? What's the U.S.'s position here?
The United States should do everything in its power to support what Israel believes is in its best interest, because what is in Israel's best interest is in the best interest of the United States. They're the only democracy in that area. They have shown over and over that they're true allies of America, and we need to be in their court, not in the Arab court, against the Israelis. Against the Israelis. Number two, what America needs to do to ensure that that Israel is protected is not cut American defense spending. Because what's going to happen is, as we cut American defense spending, we're going to be less able as a nation to project our force out to places like Israel. So if they do get invaded and we've cut defense spending too much, we're going to have to look at Israel. If they get attacked by Iran or another unfriendly country, you know, name one from that area, we're going to have to look at them and say, hey, sorry, we're not able to help you. And that'll be a sad day for America.
Congressman Hunter, thanks again for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, it was great talking with you. Thanks for having me on, and seriously, thanks for everything that you do. We really need you out there, so thanks.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Normal people are somewhere else already. If you're listening to this show, it means there's something wrong with you at this time of the day. There's something wrong in your life. If you've tuned into talk radio to listen to me when you have internet and you have all these other choices, I'm not trying to send you away. It's not like I'm a bad businessman, but if you're listening to this show, it means that there's something a little off with you. I don't mean you're like the guy who did it in Brooklyn, don't get me wrong, but there's something wrong. You should normally be with a family tonight, breaking bread, children, but they don't talk to you. You don't have any family. That's why you're listening to the show. I'm family to you. I became the patriarch in your life. I am the father figure. I'm the uncle figure. I'm the lover figure. I'm the brother figure. I'm the son figure. I'm the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost figure. That's why I'm so popular. I fill all of these roles. I am everything, and I am nothing. And that's the beauty of radio. Did you know that that's the, did you ever read the book, Miss Lonely Hearts? Is anyone, raise your hand if you know what I'm talking about. Miss Lonely Hearts. Written, I believe, by in the 19... I can't fill in the details. Beowulf, you're good on these things. Who wrote Miss Lonely Hearts and when?
Nathaniel West.
Nathaniel West. When, 1930?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Thereabouts. And it was about a... wasn't it about a newsman that people lived through? He had a column. He had a column for the lonely. And then, he fulfilled all of these fantasies for people. And at the end of the book, he's swarmed by them like ants or bees, and they smother him to death. And that's what happens. So that's why I broadcast in isolation in a lone studio. And another reason I don't exercise very much anymore is because I work out on the radio. I found out a little trick you don't realize it. With only eating why I didn't gain 100 pounds, here's the answer. I do a little calisthenics in the morning and ride the bike a bit, but I've slacked off from my old exercise regimen. Who needs... I don't really care about it anymore. It's not like I've given up. Explain why. Like, I work in a studio that's about 10 by 12, right? When I came in the studio, no air conditioning, no ventilation. I didn't want it on because I don't like cold. The temperature in here was 64 degrees from the ambient air. I've been on the air about an hour now. The temperature is 69 degrees. I've increased the temperature in here by 5 degrees Fahrenheit. Where did it come from? Came from me. I generate so much energy on this show that it's like working out. It's like doing bench presses, labs, abs, whatever. And the fact of the matter is, my labs don't need to run around the lake. You know what I'm saying? That's a metaphor. I don't need to make my labs jump in the bay and chase a false fish, because when I'm on the radio, I'm running basically, and I'm burning. I actually sweat at the end of a show. If you're not sweating and you're not exhausted, first rule of radio, if when you get off the air, you're not exhausted, you didn't do a good show. Did you know that? If you don't give it your all, you know what? Do me a favor, quit. You don't belong in this business. Give it your all. Stress yourself out. Push yourself. Dig within yourself. Come up with the best things you can. Do your work. Raise your body temperature. Then you're going to do a show people will listen to. And if you're not exhausted, if you're just blowing it off, you know what? You're off the air. You're not going to last another year. I'm telling you, that's the way it is. So tonight, for example, I was telling you, I'm not going to go to sleep. What's the point of going to sleep if I can't sleep, right? So I'm going to go to the San Francisco, to the North Beach area, to have Italian food because it's calamari night and codfish night in a certain restaurant I know. Now, I generally only eat in one Italian restaurant now, the North Beach restaurant. I mean, Lorenzo's a friend of mine. He and I, like, kibitz with each other all the time. I drive him crazy. He drives me crazy. He tries to put salt on my food. I mean, he drives me out of my mind. But I love the guy. I love the restaurant. But I hope he's not listening, God, because I'm not going there tonight. I don't go anywhere else. I do not recommend any other restaurant anymore in the city. No more Italian, nothing. End of story. Don't go anywhere else. Only go there. You'll never find me there because I'm never there. But I'm going to be in the area. If you're looking for me, you'll not find me. But I'm going to go where they serve calamari tonight and codfish. They make a codfish. Oh, my God. And then I'll walk around the streets looking at the lunatics. We call the city at this time of year the Redneck Riviera. Old story, but it is. Nothing wrong with it. I mean, if you like the wife-beater guys in the fog with and the girls walking around with the jelly rolls underneath their pants. That's very, with the tight pants that Laura talked. That's a terrific place to see all of them. They don't know what they're looking at. And the Europeans are there shivering as usual in the summertime. They think they were going to Mexico. They're going to California. They're going to put on shorts and they walk around the blonde hair standing up because it's like on the steps of Russia in 1941. They don't understand what Mark Twain said. The coldest winter, hottest summer, you know that one. I never spent the colder winter than the summer in San Francisco. It's true, and thank God that's why I live here. Play the clip.
You can't blink. You can't be intimidated. You can't be threatened. You've got to look the Tea Party in the eye and take them on. The people want us to fight. They want us to stand up. They want us to be strong. And they want us not only to create these jobs in all of the many ways. They want something big. Something massive, something that's going to make a tremendous difference. And I think that we're at that point.
Hey, if you think that's bad, how about identity theft? What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now, 1-800-LOCK-485, and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call now. Tyler, Texas. Is this Tina? Tina, welcome to the program.
Yes, it is. Michael, you had mentioned that people that listen to your show at this time, there's probably something wrong with them, and you are probably right. I find that being my age, I'm a young 48. I began listening to you when I was 30-something, and the very first thing that I heard, I didn't even know your name, but I turned the radio on, and there was this booming voice that was so pleasant, and you said the funniest thing. You said... you said you would rather see a Texas girl getting out of a truck than a liberal woman driving a Pinto with a mustache. And
that's funny.
I laughed, and you had me from there. I was absolutely.
Well, in San Francisco, if a woman doesn't have a mustache, she's called in for questioning by the police department.
Let me tell you, I told my husband because, I'm a beautiful girl, as a lot of Texas women are. We take pride in the way we look. I drive an Escalade and I drive a truck. I wear jeans and I wear boots and I wear pearls and dresses. So I'm very comfortable with who I am. But I find that a lot of people my age, especially women, they irritate me because they are not very intelligent. Now, I have a high school education, that's all. I haven't gone to college. And I find you so intriguing and so interesting, not intimidating in any kind of way. And sometimes I get mad at you at some of the things you say politically because I'm one of those real far, far right. But yet I tell my husband, I said, you know, I may go to bed being mad at Michael, but I wake up loving him every day.
Well, you're saying I'm too liberal for you, in other words.
No, not always. In some things you are. Sometimes you can be a little harsh, but that's just because some...
What is the most liberal thinking I have ever projected on my show?
Sometimes...
Let's say something you would have problems with as a right-wing Texas girl. What have I said that strikes you as too liberal? Does it come to mind?
Sometimes some of your religious point of views, because you're very you read a lot from the Old Testament, and I know you're very schooled in that, and I'm a Christian, and some of the things you say I agree with, and some of them I really
don't. I don't understand. So which, like, what from the Old Testament offended you? I'd like to know. I'd like to hear.
I really can't say that it offended me so much. It just...
What, you shall not eat shrimp or pork or something? I didn't say.
No, I do that too.
I don't care what you eat. You can eat pork. You know, the Chinese are releasing pork stores. The price of pork went up 38%. The Chinese are releasing pork bellies now on the world market because the price of pig has gone up. But that's a side note. Well, I'm glad you're still listening after 18 years. So you're 48. You started listening to me at 30?
Yeah, 30-something. I was in my late 30s. And
were you married? Were you already married at that time?
I was just getting married. And
now, wait, this is very important. Does your husband know you listen to the Savage Nation?
All the time. Oh, as a matter of fact, he was listening to you last night, and he comes in and he goes, "Did you hear what Michael said?" And I said, "Yes," and he is in total agreement.
No, it's a great state. Texas is a great state. If you had fog, like I have here, I'd move there in a minute, but I can't move to any place without fog. It's that simple. I love people from Texas. It's a great state.